Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and three-time best-selling author, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest, we focus on a topic that is very close to a lot of us, and that is relationships, with relationship expert, Dr. Tracy Dogleish. This was definitely one of my favorite podcasts that I've recorded in a very long time, and very rarely, this is the beauty and a little bit of the curse of knowledge. When I'm talking to other nutritionists, dietitians, people in my area, I have a good idea what they're going to say before they say it. When I get to speak to somebody like Dr. Tracy, who is a relationship expert, a couples therapist, a clinical psychologist, I learn so much from these podcast episodes, and today's was no different. I've been a huge fan of Dr. Tracy's work online. I've been following her Instagram page for a very long time now, and in today's podcast, we talk about how to unlearn relationship patterns so that you don't act on automatic, the link between our childhood, past relationships, and how we can bring that into our current romantic relationships if we're not careful, attachment styles, anxious, avoidant, and insecure, and how they can get triggered when we're stressed, the importance of boundaries, understanding your triggers, dealing with jealousy, and so much more. This is a podcast that if you're in a relationship, I think it's an absolute must when it comes to having a thriving romantic relationship with your partner. But I even think if you are single or your aspiration is to have a effectively what I call a partner in crime, somebody that is there on your entire journey with you, I think this allows you to take ownership and responsibility for how you need to be so that you can bring those things and bring that wonderful person potentially into your life. So without further ado, here is an incredible conversation with relationship expert Dr. Tracy Dogleish on unlearning relationship patterns, understanding your emotional triggers, and the importance of clear boundaries. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. Tracy Dogleish. Dr. Tracy is a clinical psychologist, couples therapist, relationship expert, author, speaker, podcaster, and mum of two. She specializes in helping women and mothers build healthy relationships and learn to be their best selves by helping them to let go of guilt, communicate their needs, and set boundaries in their life. Through therapy, workshops, and online educational resources, Dr. Tracy helps you identify what you feel and need, how to show up, and how to be present in your life, and give yourself permission. I'm looking forward to talking all things relationship, boundaries, and triggers in today's show. Dr. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here, Brian. It's such a privilege to be able to sit with you, especially across the pond, across the water.
Yeah, I've been such a huge fan of your Instagram page. I've been following it for a while now. I found it off the back of a podcast I did with Dr. Sarah Reardon, the Vagina Whisperer, who's putting out great content. And I came across your stuff from that. And I've got loads of your reels saved when it comes to relationship advice. And I'm really looking forward to today's podcast. But I want to jump straight in. And it's a bit of a no holds barred question to get us opened with. But I think it works as a nice little jumping off point. When it comes to relationships, Tracy, what do you see as the most important thing, or is there a hierarchy of needs that you think people need to think about, and then we'll use that as a jumping off point?
Yeah, that is such an important question. So here's the thing, Brian, is that people come to me and they say, we're arguing about the kids, we're arguing about sex, in-laws, and we want to improve our communication. And I have to say that that's the upstairs stuff. That's the tip of the iceberg. Because underneath that, what we're really looking for in our relationships, what is most important is knowing that we are important to the people that we love, knowing that we matter to them, knowing that we are enough, knowing that we're enough for them, right? And so when I talk about those kinds of things, I'm looking at our core needs and our attachment longings. That is the most important thing, is that when I go to my partner, they're going to turn to me with kindness and care and compassion and say, I see you, I'm listening, you're important to me. So I like to break this down into kind of four pieces that are really important in relationships. So that connection piece, I'm going to connect with you. I'm going to prioritize our relationship each day and be close with you. I call them my four C's. So connection, curiosity. I'm going to always be curious about what's happening for you and curious about what's happening inside of me, because that builds understanding, and building understanding leads to the third C, which is compassion. I'm going to treat you with respect, with kindness, the same way that I would to other people outside of a relationship. And then that last piece is co-creation. Let's co-create our world together. Let's be collaborative. Let's be a team. And I think when we can follow those four C's, it really outlines what it is that we're trying to do in our relationships.
Why do you think people struggle with any or all of the four C's? And I love that because I saw your reel when you went through this. And it was one of those that just as a kind of a, as you said, tip of the iceberg, but a reminder for me, this is how I need to show up in my relationship with my partner. But why do you think people struggle with the C's? Or is it a case that it's normally one that dominates over the others? Or is it a combination that our relationship patterns, I know in your program, you talk about unlearning relationship patterns. Is it something that's just kind of there that we need to just rewire? Or how do you find it?
Yeah, I mean, could we call it the ego? We could definitely say that. Could we say it's our reactive minds? We build assumptions and perceptions about other people. And that comes from our early childhood experiences of the child that has these unmet needs, right? So everybody in some way has a story of, you know, think about a time when you were seven. So we tend to form our core memories at seven, and something really big was happening and you really needed something and you were upset or sad. And what did you do in that moment? Did you turn to your caregiver and that attachment figure? Did your parents say, oh, buddy, I see you. Like, that's so hard. You know, I'm going to sit with you through this. Or did they say things, which is what I commonly hear, get over it. This isn't a big deal. Suck it up. Listen, there are wars going on. There are real problems out there. You need to suck it up, right? They dismiss, they minimize, they tell us that our needs and feelings aren't important. Or many people in my office will say, you know, I actually don't remember. And I just remember playing in my room all by myself. So when I got hurt, I would just keep it to myself. So we take forward these unmet needs and longings with our first experiences of relationships, of love, of connection with others. And then we build them into our relationship today. And ultimately, that builds this disconnection.
That's given me a very unintentional segue to something that I was going to come back to later. One of my favorite reels that you made that I saved was, why does my partner's mood impact me so much? And that was one of those, it opened up a bit of a Pandora's box for me, because my partner, Serena, we've been together for years. And something that still to this day gets me is if her mood is off, I take it very personally. And I had to go back into some uncomfortable truths when it comes to childhood stuff and stuff with my dad and things along those lines that you brought awareness to. But I think it was very important because it was blind for me until I saw the reel. It wasn't even in my mind. Talk to us about things along those lines in terms of partner's mood impacting you and how that relates potentially to some unmet needs from childhood, just because that's one that really personally connected with me.
That one, not just you, Brian, that connected to a huge community of people of really feeling seen on that. So how do I understand this? As building a healthy relationship, what we're aiming for is interdependence. And interdependence holds two pieces. The one piece is autonomy. I am an individual. I can stand on my own two feet. I can say, I really like Taco Tuesday, right? And then when my partner comes along and says, I really want pizza, and you say, great, you get your pizza, but I'm going to have Taco Tuesday. That's my autonomy, my independence, right? And I can say, this is what I like. And just because I like tacos and you want pizza today doesn't mean there's anything wrong with us. Okay, so that is that one piece. But then the other piece is our ability to co-create, which is our intimacy. So we want autonomy, but we also want intimacy. And trying to find the balance between these two things, again, depending on what your early childhood experiences were, can be incredibly difficult. So I view people like two separate boxes. I use my hands. So two individual people. And inside each of you, you have your own thoughts, feelings, opinions, desires, wishes, and values. And your partner has their own. But because of our early childhood experiences, because of our parents doing the best that they could, but they didn't know how to do this, or they couldn't do it for themselves. And if you can't do it for yourself, you can't do it for your children. Instead, what happens is instead of being a separate person, you lump into the other person. You lose your identity. You fuse with the other person. Some people will say words like codependency, emotional fusion. They all go together there. And in a way, this is our attempt to stay safe. And when I say safety, I mean connected, right? Because if I see my partner in a bad mood and I don't want to say anything, it's because I don't want to upset them further. I don't want to disrupt what's happening between us. I want to somehow stay in a familiar pattern. But what we need to do is we need to co-create. We need to find a way to, and then I put my hands like a link, right? Because we don't lose the separate identity, but we find a way to connect together. And so what happens in childhood then is we didn't learn how to do this. That when you say, oh, you know, let's go back to tacos. I really want tacos for dinner. I love tacos. And your parents are like, that's ridiculous. You can't have tacos on Tuesday. Come on, right? Like just... this is what you're eating, eat it and don't complain, right? So like in those moments, you don't get to be seen for that seven-year-old who loves tacos. I'm just using a silly example of tacos, right? But, you know, the little boy who loves tacos doesn't get that own identity and then doesn't get to see how they can create that world in with their parents, with their significant others.
How important, and again, this might be a loaded question, but how important do you think it is that people understand their own triggers? And because my default in the past has been automatically to blame the other person, that it's their fault, they've done something, as opposed to seeing it as my reaction to something that's normally a problem. From my experience, Tracy, and I'm sure you've seen this, but in 99 out of 100 cases, whatever the problem I think is the problem in the relationship currently is not. It's from something in the past that I'm now bringing forward, past hurt, past childhood, past relationships that I'm carrying in. How important do you think it is for people to understand their own triggers when it comes to how they show up in a relationship?
I use this example in the first chapter of my book, comes out next year, fall 2023. It's going to be called I Didn't Sign Up For This, because that's what I kept hearing in relationships. And people in my office would say, this isn't the relationship I signed up for. I didn't sign up for this. Now with the kids and the disconnection with my partner, those triggers is like you experiencing a time zone shift. Mm-hmm. So am I here today in this moment with my partner, or am I, you know, 3 hours back, 8 hours back? Sometimes people are even in the future, right? If we learn to worry and catastrophize about what's going to happen. But when we look back, we are in the past and we are acting from, and we could use all kinds of different words here of like, you know, what could be words? We could say our reactive mind. We could say our adult child, right? So in some way, it's the child inside of us that is protesting in that moment. And so again, there's little Brian sitting at the table saying, why can't you just understand that I like tacos? Like, right? Or, you know, I didn't make the soccer team. Like, it's a big deal, right? And no one is seeing you. And so today in that moment, when your partner doesn't turn towards you when you put out that bid, then it's like, I'm seven-year-old Brian again. And no one is seeing that it really hurts me that I didn't make the soccer or the football team, or right? And so understanding what those triggers are is so important, so that we're not shifting time zones and that we can be present with our partner here. And so what we do then is we layer, I always love the analogy like sunglasses. And Brian, I use a lot of imagery and analogies because it always helps make something really real and concrete.
I love
for
the
me.
Ones that you use, by the way, and it helps.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's like sunglasses. So you're back in your old time zone. Your parents gave you a sunglass, you know, a blue pair of sunglasses, or maybe even the wool coat. I love the wool coat one, right? They've given you this. And now here you are showing up in your relationship today. And you're looking at your partner with the blue sunglasses. She's got her red sunglasses on. And so you can't see this object together. And then what we do is we point fingers at each other, externalizing, and say, well, if you were just different and if you did things differently, then this wouldn't happen. Rather than being curious, we've all been there, right? We've all been there. Rather than being curious of going inwards and saying, what part of this is mine? What is being triggered here? And how can I acknowledge that there's something that I need here? And Brian, I think what's the important piece here, and I see this with the members in my community and Be Connected, my online space. I see this all the time that shows up, and it's like, I just need my partner to validate me. Words of affirmation is my love language. Why can't they give that to me? And the hard truth that I say to people is I say, yeah, I know you really need this. This is something that you have needed for such a long time. And it's not going to be your partner's only responsibility to meet that, because now here you are as an adult, and it's your job also to start giving yourself that. So instead of looking outward and continuing to want your partner to validate you, can you start validating that small part of you that was never seen as a kid, that needed to be recognized for all that you were doing or all that you were struggling? And then how would that free you up to then respond to your partner, to then interact with them and talk to them and see what it is that they're saying?
That's so powerful. And it reminds me, I don't think my partner will mind me sharing it, but we had a fight recently. This was my thing, where she was going away traveling with friends, and it brought up a whole host of triggers and abandonment issues for me. And I spent days just going for walks by myself, Tracy, and I've got my partner, my daughter, and great people around me, but I just needed time alone to process this disconnected feeling that, in my language, this is how messed up our internal dialogue can be, but in my world, in my head, her wanting to go away with friends for a few days meant, well, she doesn't love you, she'd prefer to be with somebody else and be with other people. And it was bringing up a whole host of abandonment issues that I've been years dealing with my father and things along those lines. And it was like someone just, as you said, put the glasses on and now you could see clearly for the first time. I was like, oh, this has nothing to do with now. This has absolutely nothing to do with my partner going away on a trip. This is my own trauma that I haven't dealt with that's been re-triggered now in the moment. And my default to that is normally to go into a very avoidant, disassociated way. And one of my things that I learned that was very useful.
You disconnect.
Completely disconnected. But those attachment styles that we default to, the avoidant, the anxious, the secure, is, I think, very useful for people to understand. With attachment styles, do you think that is something that people need to have a baseline understanding? So when I think of, like, I'm a nutritionist, so basic calories, micronutrients, macronutrients is kind of my bread and butter as a nutritionist. With clinical psychology and relationships and in your area, do you think attachment styles is something that people need to understand, or are there other things that kind of give a better bang for their buck when it comes to how they show up personally in relationships?
I think this is, okay, how do I think about this? It's almost like baking a cake. So if I'm going to bake a cake, I can't forget the salt, because the salt reacts with, and this is outside of my area of expertise, but right, so the salt reacts with the baking powder and you need it to create the rising of the cake, right? If without the salt, you can't have the cake, you will have something else. You need to understand attachment styles because they let us know what we do in times of stress and anxiety. That is when our attachment system is activated. And so you're telling me right here that this was a time where your attachment style, or your attachments rather, that safety, the need to feel safe, soothed, secure, seen, that was activated by this external event going on with your partner. She was leaving, right? She's going on a trip. That activated the stress and anxiety inside of you. Of course, that makes sense. And if you can understand what is my go-to right here, then you can start building strategies to help you and your partner move through that. Because here's the thing, if you shut down and go inside and disconnect and dissociate, your partner is standing on, she's driving the boat by herself. And she's like, well, where did Brian go? Brian was right beside me here. We were driving the boat together. And now he's gone. He's gone, you know, he's left the boat. He's out to sea. And we need to know our partners are still going to be there with us. So if you can understand then that when I get stressed and anxious, my default mode is to do this, then I can start communicating that to my partner, right? So attachment is one piece. What do I do in times of stress? How do I seek care? And how do I also offer care? People often miss that when it comes to attachment styles, is that it's not just about my seeking for soothing and comfort. My attachment style also determines how I provide care to my partner. So someone who is more avoidantly attached and their partner comes over to them and says, oh gosh, you know, today was just awful and I'm actually incredibly worried I'm going to lose my job because I didn't meet this deadline. And your partner says, babe, it's no big deal. You're fine. We'll be fine, right? If they're avoidantly attached, they've entered into caregiving in that way rather than being able to say, ooh, this is really hard for me when I see my partner struggling and I'm going to tap into a different response with them. I'm going to do something different here. So for you, Brian, then, if you can communicate to your partner, oh, you know, this is when my abandonment wounds are showing up. I know this is not what you're doing by taking your trip. And actually, I'm so happy that you get to nurture that autonomy of you. And I know in the front of my brain that when you come back, right, the front of our brain is our rational part, the prefrontal cortex. And by the way, for those listening, your prefrontal cortex doesn't finish developing until you're 25. And if you're a male, your brain has actually taken longer to reach its full development compared to a female. So I think that's really important for us to know. But your prefrontal cortex is the last to develop, which is the part of you that can rationally say, I am safe and loved. My partner is going for a trip. They're going to have this trip because they need time for themselves. And I know that when they come back, they're going to have all of this new energy to give to me and we're going to reconnect and feel good. But the emotional part of your brain gets triggered. It's blaring red and fear and anxiety. And it's like, no, no, danger, danger. But your brain now in the state can't tell. And I see you laughing because it's relatable, right?
True. Like,
this is where we go.
You're literally explaining exactly how the process went.
Right. And I really want to emphasize this. And I say this to my clients in such a compassionate and loving way of like, you're not unique. And I say that in the sense that your brain and your nervous system is wired the same way as someone else's brain and nervous system, which means that when we open the door and there's a bear standing there, we are going to go into some kind of mode to save ourselves, right? So your individual experiences are unique to you. What's happened in your childhood is unique to you. And your brain is going to respond in the way that it knows how to, which is to send out this flooding message of danger, danger, danger. And so then, Brian, when you learn what your triggers are and you learn what your attachment style is and you learn kind of the sticking points of communication, right? So if you tend to like outwardly go, oh, you don't love me, you're never there for me, you go into like blame and criticism. You can put all of this together and then start to say to your partner, oh gosh, I can really feel this like triggering inside of me. I can't make sense of it yet. I'm going to go for a walk and come back later and let's talk about it. Right. And then you can do the work inside of you, or you can ask your partner for a hug because hugs are soothing for our nervous systems.
It's funny that you mentioned like that alone time, going for the walk, something that I have to do quite regularly. And as somebody that has spent years kind of identifying and working through some of those core wounds when it comes to relationships, abandonment, etc., I know that if I ask 100 people, they're going to have a different response to how I'm having the response right now. So I know that it's specific to me and subjective to me, meaning that when something happens with my partner, if she wouldn't react the same way, I'm like, oh crap, this is my thing I need to deal with. I'm like, this isn't a human nature issue. This is a Brian issue that's being triggered now. And I think something that I wish I knew 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and there's people listening to this podcast in different age brackets, 25, 35, 45, that if I had known that a lot of this is your own stuff that comes up, it straight away it gives you some of that ownership and responsibility to potentially make some positive change with it. And I know that you have a program on this, so I'll link it for people in the show notes because they can go through this. I'll also link up the webinar and the podcast, I'm Not Your Shrink, but the program is Unlearning Relationship Patterns and Improving Communication. With relationship patterns, what are some of the most common negative relationship patterns you see? Because obviously unlearning them is going to be very important, but some of the common ones that you regularly see, because as you mentioned, the beauty of we're not unique, we all have similar responses, just different triggers potentially. There's a lot of overlap in what can support people and help them. So can you talk to us about that?
Yes, absolutely. And so, yeah, we all get into these negative patterns, because what we must acknowledge in our relationship is that each of you influence each other. Right? That it's like the dance. If I step forward and our arms are connected, I step forward, you're naturally going to step back. And then when I step back, you will naturally step forward. So Dr. Sue Johnson found that there were three common cycles that couples get into. And there's lots of different ways that I could talk about this. So I'll do the three cycles first, then I'll add in another one that I think is really important and we don't talk enough about. So those three cycles stem from our unmet needs and longings in our relationship. And so the question is, what do we do? There are a set of couples, and I want people to understand that this isn't just a, oh, that's me, I always do that. Remember, humans are flexible, and like, we need to think of context. We need to think of the function of something. And we need to kind of remember that we're all going to go through stages and change depending on what's happening in our lives. So the first cycle is a blame cycle. It's like pointing the finger at the other person, and you're constantly one-upping each other. So you put out the bid, you say, you didn't do the dishes. The other person's like, oh yeah? Well, you didn't take the garbage out last week. And then the other person went, well, yeah, well, I've been doing bedtime all week. What have you been doing? Right? So it's like one-upping each other. And underneath that, really, there are two people who are just trying to be seen and understood. Okay? Common cycle. The second one is a pursue-defend. Dr. Johnson calls it the polka dance. And really, that is the as I step forward, you step back, or the analogy I like to use. It's like one partner knocks on the door. Hello, hello, are you there? Are you there? I need you, I need you. And the other partner on the other side either gets defensive or they shut down and withdraw, right? But the more you shut down and withdraw, the more the other person bangs on the door. The more that person bangs on the door, the more the other person shuts down and withdraws. Right. So then the third cycle is a freeze and flee. Now, this couple in my office, I will see them and I'll say, so tell me, you know, how was the week? Oh, yeah, it was good. It was fine. And, you know, both partners will look at each other nervously, neither one wanting to bring up the fight. OK, well, did you talk about the homework? No, no, no. We're not going to talk about the homework. Why would we do that? You know, we don't want to fight. So these are two people who feel very anxious in the relationship at rocking the boat. And underneath that, there are deep fears of being unworthy and unlovable. But neither one of them bring it up. That brings me to a point, Brian, though, is that if you are sitting with another couple and, you know, the moon pattern aligns and you happen to be talking about your relationships, great, because relationship chat is healthy. We all struggle at some point. I wish more people would talk about their difficulties. So here's the thing. When that couple says, oh, we never fight, I don't want you to hear that as we don't struggle in any way, because everybody bumps up against somebody else in some way. So those are the three common cycles. The other one that I like to talk about is the overfunctioning and underfunctioning cycle. And that, again, is a way to deal with, how do we get close with somebody? How do we deal with our independence and our closeness? And naturally, there's one person in a relationship that takes up a lot of space and the other person doesn't. I describe it like two bubbles in a closed-in room. I think of my therapy room, my office here. And one person, naturally, their bubble gets bigger and bigger. They're a caretaker. They take responsibility for the kids. They carry the mental load. Tends to be the women in terms of managing the relational load, the household load. They're overfunctioning. And as their bubble gets bigger, what happens to the other bubble or the other balloon in the room? It has to get smaller. So that person underfunctions. And that person looks for them to problem solve, doesn't initiate tasks around the house, doesn't take on the load. And so both partners in this dynamic have to take responsibility to, you know, one person has to step up, the other person has to step back.
Is the way to minimize that, because there's definitely a lot of people listening who will grasp that bubble analogy, because from every experience of every relationship I can ever think of, there was always one that felt like it was taking up more space than the other. I use different language. I always felt like one was more aggressive, either it was me or the person I was going out with. And the bubble analogy is actually a better analogy. I think it serves the purpose and gives better language to it. But what's the way to keep that balance? Or is it a case that there should always be a slight misbalance and then it's just kind of a pendulum that goes both sides, like a seesaw? What's the kind of optimal, I won't say approach, but what's the optimal kind of goal for people to strike for from your experience? Is it a 50-50 split? Is it 60-40 that jumps back and forth? What have you experienced?
I believe that our relationships are never going to be equal. And Brian, I mean, here's the reality, is that the things that I hold in my mind, my husband, because of who he is, because he's a different person, he's never going to hold the same things in his mind. And I can't expect him to operate in the same way as me. So our relationship, I will say, is not equal in lots of ways, but it feels fair. At least I better check with him. But it's just, it feels fair, right? Like, our relationship is one where we can check in with each other and say, gosh, you know, how are you feeling about this right now and all the things that you're doing? You know, can I step in on this space, or do I need to step back on that space? And acknowledging how much we're doing. So I think the question is, I'm going to reshape that question because the answer is really, it depends, which is, you know, one of my favorite answers as a psychologist, because there is no one right way. Mm. It depends. It depends on what is the function of this behavior. So am I doing all of this caretaking for you because I feel anxious, because I'm worried about losing you, because I think that you're not competent to do it? And what's the impact of that on me? Am I starting to build resentment? Am I burning out? Am I exhausted from always giving up my own needs? And nobody can give up all of their needs all of the time without a cost to that, which is resentment, which is a toxic emotion that slowly erodes at the health of your relationship. And on the flip side, for the person who underfunctions, you know, what's the function of that for them? Do they let their partner problem solve for them because they fear saying what they actually feel and need? And again, so you were using words like aggressive and passive. So the person who is passive actually breeds resentment because they're not vocalizing what they want and need. And the irony with passivity is it actually breeds resentment or anger rather from the other person because they want to know you. Like, let's go back to Taco Tuesday, right? Every Tuesday, your partner says, "Hey, Brian, what do you want for dinner?" And you're like, "I don't know. You choose. I'm good. You choose." Okay, great. I get to choose, right? Like that could be a very exciting and fulfilling thing early on in a relationship. But then at year 10, come on, Brian, just choose what you want for dinner. Is it Taco Tuesday or pizza?
Yeah, there's so much there. That resentment, I always think of it as the figurative death by 1,000 cuts. It's not necessarily a death blow like, yes, you know, somebody cheating or a really big lie, but it's a figurative death by 1,000 cuts. So yeah, I think minimizing that with resentment, I think I might be wrong here because this is not my area. This is your area of expertise, but something that I've applied, I would hope, similar to what you said earlier, you'd have to talk to my partner, but I hope successfully applied, is nipping small problems when they're small enough to be solved so that we don't have to deal with the growth when they get bigger. Is that just down to communication? That's something that I've experienced, that having that conversation early when the problem is still small has been the way to avoid it so far. Is that what you advise, or is it something else when people want to minimize that potential resentment or figurative death by 1,000 cuts?
Yeah, that is definitely an important piece there, is communication. I think even before that is asking yourselves, what's my unmet need? Right? What am I needing here? What am I struggling with? So, you know, I think of the word that people use are things like self-abandonment. What am I giving up about myself? And Brian, these come in micro moments. So I want the listeners to think for a moment, when was something that happened today where you didn't vocalize what you needed, or you were looking after someone else's needs, where you said yes, but maybe you wanted to say no? Or maybe you want to say like, "Oh, I'm not sure, I'll get back to you," right? We do this frequently throughout the day. And if we keep doing it, it builds up over time, which is why people end up in my office kind of having some kind of like a crisis in a way, saying, "I didn't sign up for this." Because nobody enters into a relationship saying, "Hey, let's go on a date. I can't wait to completely abandon everything I want and need and only focus on you," right? And nor do we enter the workforce, or I'm trying to think like parenthood. We don't enter parenthood and say, "I'm going to give up everything I ever wanted and needed and give it all to you," right? Like, I think there's like a self in there too when we have children of like, you know, this will fulfill me, this is meaningful. And then here you are ending up, you know, at year two with your kids and you're like, "Okay, so I am reduced now to all of the things that I did not want to do." So it's the micro moments. And like you said, Brian, so that communication piece can be really important. So tuning into, what did I just say no to myself here? How can I start saying yes to myself? And how can I then onboard my partner to that? Last night, I was super tired. And I just said to my husband, like, "Listen, can you be parent A? Because I am so tired tonight. I can't stay regulated. I'm exhausted." And by saying that first, it makes it real for me. I'm not having an internal dialogue that says, "Just be a good mom. pull it together. You've got two kids. They need you. It becomes real for me. I also label my emotional experience, which then helps ground me instead of floating in a sea. Am I? Am I not? What am I feeling? What's this? Should I? I don't know. And then letting my partner know where I'm at so he can see me. My husband can say, oh, you're struggling right now? Okay, I got it. Or in some cases, he might say, oh, no, you know, Tracy, like, tomorrow's my big meeting. Like, I absolutely can't. How can we do this together so that we can both get through the night and both get through tomorrow?
I love that. I love that. I think, as you said, it's identifying your emotions and sharing it, which, again, sounds very obvious when you say it. But there's people listening, my past self included, when you would feel it and you would have this internal dialogue going back and forth like two people playing tennis in your brain, going, am I feeling this way? Am I not? And it just, you don't express it. And then it just builds and builds. And in my case, it would be like this volcano. Now, I'd never erupt projecting outwards, but I would have it internally going, why aren't you doing this? Or why can't you read my mind, for the lack of a better phrase? And it's so silly when we think about it. And you mentioned the self-abandonment there, and I know you have a webinar on setting boundaries, and I'll link that in the description for people as well. But talk to us about the importance of boundaries, because I think that's something that's absolutely key. Now, you cover this fantastically well on your channels, but talk to us about the importance of boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boundaries. I want to start by saying, depending on where you are, you might not know what your boundaries are, and that's completely okay. You might even have this internal reaction as soon as you're hearing us shift into boundaries. I sat with someone recently of an older generation, so in their 60s, and they said, boundaries, well, you know, don't you want to be kind to others? And I reminded them that actually boundaries are loving and kind and are one of the most compassionate things that you can do for yourself and the other person. I describe boundaries like an invisible line between you and I. It's where I end and you begin. And one of the biggest hangups that people have around boundaries is when they say things like, but they don't respect my boundaries. And you don't get to control whether somebody else is whether someone else respects their boundaries. All you get to control is whether you are respecting your own boundaries and whether you're holding them. Because ultimately, what we're talking about here when we say boundaries is what I want to happen and what I don't want to happen in our relationship together.
For those who struggle with boundaries, and one of my friends used to tell me that, and I loved the line that boundaries are the gift we give ourselves that we share with everyone around us. And with boundaries, it's something that I really struggled with in the beginning. What advice do you offer people to kind of go from zero to one when it comes to setting up boundaries within a relationship?
Start acknowledging first when you say yes but you wanted to say no. And even for myself, and I want to normalize that we are all on this lifelong journey of discovering our boundaries, that you don't show up one day and say, I've done it, I've made it, I've evolved, I'm awakened, and I'm never going to struggle again. No, absolutely not. And my own journey with boundaries became even more apparent when my second child, was born. Because I was so good at saying yes to everybody. If a friend wanted to meet at 10 a.m., but oh gosh, I really had to get some work done and 2 p.m. would be better, I would say yes. And inside, I would silently cringe instead of vocalizing what it is that I wanted and needed. So just you simply bringing awareness to those times when you need something, but you don't vocalize it. That would be the first thing to start with. The second thing, if we're going zero to just adding in a bit of boundaries, is starting to express those small things to someone who is safe in your life. So is it with your partner? Is it at work? Is it even something that you can do for yourself? So, for example, if you're listening, think about your boundaries around your emails and your phone. So this could be something that is really just about you and not about anybody else. If you are on your email outside of working hours, that could be a great way to start looking after you and saying, my new boundary with emails is to not open them, to not check them outside of my working hours. Of course, context specific, whatever that looks like in your workplace, I think that's important to acknowledge. But in my own work, because I set my schedule, I could easily be replying to emails at 9 p.m. at night. And Brian, here's the thing. I am not perfect at this by no means. Sometimes I open my email. So my work email is not on my phone, but sometimes I'll be on my computer doing something and I'll open my work email. Oh yeah, okay, well, that's a tomorrow issue. But I'll actually type out the email. And because I want to demonstrate to others that I have boundaries, I don't send my emails until between my working hours. So clients know you're not going to hear from me outside of these certain hours. And even if I have chosen, that's my choice to open the email, it's going to be my choice of also when I send it. So could you start choosing something different like that? Small things frequently.
Yeah, I do something nearly identical with email and work-related tasks. But I'm curious with boundaries, because something that me and my partner have discussed is when it comes to jealousy. Now, thankfully, neither of us are kind of naturally ridiculously jealous for no reason. Like, and again, no reason is a very loose term. I should be very mindful of my language. There's a trigger going on internally that's getting projected outwards. So just to clarify and reframe my language a little bit. But from our context, we have certain things where jealousy is not an issue, but there are boundaries where if it crosses, I feel jealous or she feels jealous. And our kind of rule for thumb is, you know, would you want the other person to feel if this was flipped? If you just flipped the script and somebody was texting me or texting her, how would you want the other person to react? And that's kind of the guiding light that we use. Again, that's not advice, far from it. That's just what works in our relationship. But with jealousy, is that something that you see regularly when it comes to relationships? And thankfully, this isn't something I've experienced firsthand. I think probably my avoidant natural attachment style lends itself to moving away from that. If anything else, I have to probably be a bit more on the other side. But is jealousy, and the only reason I bring it up is because when I think boundaries, I think, well, jealousy is the first thing that comes to mind with that in terms of setting up the boundaries around it. How have you found the clients you've worked with, the people you work with, the people who are following you online? Is jealousy something a lot of people struggle with? And if so, what, and again, a Pandora's box of a question, I know, but what are some of the things that people can do to potentially bring some awareness to it in terms of how they can positively impact it?
I think the first thing I want to offer people listening is that you recognize that this is a normal human emotion and that there's absolutely nothing wrong with you feeling jealous. We were sold the message that you should never feel jealous. And yet it makes sense of why somebody feels jealous. So jealousy says to me that you have a loss of something or the potential loss of something, which makes sense of why you would feel jealous, right? So if I could lose our safety and security because you're talking to somebody else, yeah, I'm going to feel jealous. That's really hard. And I think that's important of how you're connecting this to boundaries of being able to talk about what is it that I want and need. And sometimes is it even about your own self in terms of something you have to do, right? So let's see. We are opening Pandora's box, but let's add sex into the mix here, which is a big topic. Let's save it for another conversation one day. Be happy to sit with you again, Brian, but let's just, you know, throw this one in here. And you know, maybe you and your partner are having different desire levels and you haven't been having sex as frequently. And maybe there's even this kind of jealous feeling when your partner's going out and doing something. Well, what part of this could you own? Are you stepping into the relational arena with your partner? Are you initiating? Are you identifying what really turns you on and what excites you and what you want to happen with your partner, right? So I think if we could understand jealousy as another piece of information, just like we would with anger, sadness, pain, anxiety, fear, worry, happiness, right? All of these emotions give us information into what it is that we need. Needs are boundaries, right? So I can understand that I want this or whatever it is. So I think it's really important in a relationship to spend some time hanging out with your jealousy. My advice would be to not show up and just, and this is with any those difficult emotions, right? Like I say to couples, if you're feeling resentment, it's probably not so good to show up to your dinner that night and say, I resent you, right? Like I'm so jealous of, but I think you need to spend time in that feeling yourself and understand what is this trying to tell me? And then we could use that into a launching point of what are we trying to heal within ourselves? What is, and they can be such benign markers, right? And it can be about yourself. I'll share this here. I had shared a feeling of jealousy with my partner, and it was more about my own loss or fear of being important or being the person that excites my partner, right? Like, how normal is that to feel that? And once I could label what that feeling was about, it told me then what I needed to do. And it could just open up a whole experience in your relationship. So jealousy is not a bad feeling. Understand what it means for you. Identify what you need. And then maybe talk about the needs with your partner.
Amazing. Tracy, I know we're coming to an end now, and I've just got one final question. And as I mentioned, I'm a huge fan of your content, your Instagram page, Dr. Tracy D. I'm going to link for people in the description. I'll link the webinar, the program, the podcast, everything, the website as well as drtracyd.com. But I just have one final question. Because you have a great online presence and you're putting out so much valuable content, and there's lots of listeners, we have a massive podcast here, so I know this is going to have such an impact and a positive impact on people who either are aspiring to be in relationships they want or in relationships now and are taking back the control. But if you could put up one message for everybody who's in a relationship across social media, think of Instagram, an Instagram post or a reel, and you could have one message to everybody on that platform who's in a relationship, what would you say to them?
I would say to let go of your perfectionism, your drive to find the right way, the right moment, the right way to cook something. You know, I've had couples fight about how to boil water or cut carrots or whatever, right? So when we go into that space, Brian, we are tapping into our egos, and our egos create separation between people because they're trying to protect us. So stop trying to be perfect and tap into you making mistakes, being authentic and vulnerable with others, showing up you and sometimes messy you, and then trusting that the most important thing you can do in your relationship, which was probably not modeled to you as a kid, is to learn how to repair, how to go back. Can I swear? Is it okay if I swear?
Yeah. We swear a lot on this podcast. We haven't done any in this episode.
Okay, good. Okay. I know we haven't, but and I love when it resonates, right? So learn how to repair and to go back to your partner and to own your shit. That is what we're doing in our relationships. So learn how to do that. Because when you can go back and not just with your partner, when you can model that to your kids, between you and your partner, but also you with your child, or, you know, think of even your parent, right? It just feels good to be acknowledged and to be recognized and to have someone say, that was my shit showing up and I'm really sorry. And I can see that this is something I need to work on. And next time I will, because when we don't repair the small things, that rug gets bumpy when we sweep it under. And it's like what the image you use, it's a death by a thousand cuts. That stuff builds up. So don't be perfect in your relationship. Don't try to, you know, push all that stuff away. Be messy, authentic, vulnerable, and learn how to do a really good repair.
Love that. What an amazing way to finish. And one of the tools that I used and I still use to this day is, what kind of partner would I want my daughter to end up with? My daughter's 7, and I still have to pull myself out when it comes to ego and my reactions and how I'm reacting. I'm like, okay, how would I want Holly's future partner or husband to be in this potential situation? And that sometimes is enough to pull you out of the ego and the you of the moment and be like, right, I'm not showing up as my best self here. So that's just, again, a wonderful way to wrap it up. Tracy, I've loved this podcast. As I said, I'm such a huge fan of your work. I can't wait to read the book when it's out next fall. And again, if we do a round two at any point to help push that out, I'd be more than happy to help promote your message, because I think you're doing incredible work. And I can't thank you enough again for your time.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for inviting me here and for an amazing conversation.
And for everybody listening, everything we talked about in today's podcast, the webinar programs, podcasts, all the links will be in the description on briankeenfitness.com, on the show notes, and on wherever you're listening to podcasts, in the description on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are found. Dr. Tracy, thank you so much again.
There you have it. Relationship expert Dr. Tracy Dogleish on unlearning relationship patterns, understanding your emotional triggers, and the importance of clear boundaries. As I mentioned in the intro, this is one of my favorite podcasts that I've done. I learned so much from this episode. I'm definitely going to be going back with a notepad and pen. I get so much from Dr. Tracy's Instagram page, and we got to go deep and dive into a lot of different topics in today's podcast. So I'm so grateful I got to have this conversation. Hopefully you got as much from it as I did. Be sure, if you did, pass it on to any family members or friends who you think will benefit from it, or even your partners. If you've got a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, or partner, or a romantic partner, definitely pass it on to them, and hopefully they and will open up some of the dialogue that you can bounce back and forth. So that's everything from me from this week's podcast. Thank you all for listening. Catch you all next Monday.